Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
I'm in the queue, but it said only listen, so I don't understand.
You're live right now.
Oh, okay.
Good.
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years' combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Here we go.
I know. It's one of those. As we know, we're actually pre-recording. We'll be doing that a lot soon when they get put on, but anyhow, so technically one could ask, how did everything go? But I think we'll save that one for tomorrow when we do our regular show. But
sure.
Other than that, I mean, you're getting ready for your daughter's graduation. How did her prom go?
Yeah, prom went really good. They, I did her hair, which was a disaster as far as I was concerned, but she thought it was fine. So she's so nonplussed about things like that. But it was very 70s looking. She has, like, we feathered her bangs out and feathered her hair out a bit. So she had a very Farrah Fawcett-esque looking hairdo, which I was, like, horrified over. But they had fun. Her little group of friends went and took photos, and they went out to dinner, and then they went to prom, and then two of her girlfriends came back to our house. So I set up in her bedroom. I cleaned her room up while she was gone. Well, she did most of it, but I finished it for her. And I washed a bunch of her pajamas so the girls would have PJs if they didn't prepare for that. And I put a little tray on her bed with some waters and cookies and fruit in case they were hungry when they got home, and so that was all fun. Yeah, I made breakfast the next morning. They were rather meh about the prom part of prom. I guess it was kind of a letdown. It was just another school dance. It wasn't very fancy or decorated well, and there was no food or anything. There was cookies and popcorn at their prom, and
I thought,
that is kind of a bummer.
Yeah,
but they still had fun. They had fun with their friends because they were hanging out, not necessarily because it was prom. But it was
right.
It was
right.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. At least it will have a good memory as opposed to a really tragic memory, which a lot of things can happen that do that. Quite frankly, if you want to know my personal opinion, I really don't remember my prom night all that much. I mean, I know, the person I went with, and I know that we danced, and but as far as the actual theme and everything, I mean, if I really want to, I can go on the website that they have for the high school reunions, and I can go back, because of course when you have that, everybody has that nostalgic memory about what high school was, and of course going back and seeing all that. And I really don't care. I mean, it's not that I don't care. It's like,
I didn't go to my prom, so I don't have any
Oh, wow.
memories of it. I just By that point, I went to continuation school, but the continuation mm-hmm. school I went to was on the same campus as the quote-unquote regular high school. So we still got to do all the regular high school events, but our mm-hmm. education was in a very different track. And at that point, I was like, all you normies are lame. I don't want to go to any of your stupid events. So I was very anti the system, which I'm sure is shocking.
Yeah, really? I mean, come on. You're such a, you know, by the book lady.
I know. The mainstream.
I know. But so here we are, our subject, yes. of course. And, you know, for me, there wasn't anything of that nature in it, to be able to sort of talk about what happened. It's I know that the prom and the high school graduation and all, like my daughter's stepson's graduation is this Friday, and then they're mm-hmm. taking the whole family and going to Galveston, Texas, to the beach area and having like a family
nice.
Vacation-y thing. So because her eldest who graduates is in the National Guard and will be getting ready for boot camp. So all that being said, I just got a chance to read my Mother's Day card, which came in the mail, and she was so sad. She says, Mom, I'm so sorry it's going to come late. But I said to her laughingly, I at least got it, my birthday card, which she did send. And she says, I sent it out in advance, never got to me. It is lost in the U.S. postal system, never to return again. I mean, it may be in the ether. Somebody up there wanted it and took it out of the physical realm. I don't know, but whatever it is, it never came to me. So I was, you know, reading it, and it was a very beautiful card, and I got very emotional over it. And she says, you know,
nice.
I'm learning how to communicate, you know, hold myself in check and be able to communicate. And I'm thinking, to me, that was really important because it's not that we have a bad communication. Both of us get very agitated quickly, and then that creates that pulling apart. And so I have had to learn to try to be more conciliatory, which is certainly not my style. But, you know, it works to get us, you know, to try and get around the corner. And then, of course, the magic moment was gone because there were three of the kids wanting her attention and everything. So I just went, I love you very much. Have a good time, you know, with the graduation. Give, you know, James a hug. Have a good vacation time. And, you know, happy anniversary, by the way, because their anniversary actually is tomorrow as well. So they're like, yeah, it's a big thing. So that's the only thing that happened for conversation, but I wanted to throw that in only because usually we kind of go back and forth, and mine was sort of this other thing, not really a specific, you know, like, yes, there was all this happening. It was just, you know, a card came in the mail, and I got to engage my daughter and converse with her. So that was that, but that's
nice.
Excellent to me. But,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so... I know. So now here we are with our subject for this episode is, you know, I think, and I can't remember, now this tells you it, hedge witch, green witch, kitchen witch. So I'm kind of, you know, kind of, we have three different versions of what the particular witch is and what it does, what we do kind of a thing.
Right.
So...
Right.
You know, why don't you kick it off with picking one of those three that we'll dive into to begin with?
Oh, well, okay then. If I get to pick, I'm going to start with Green Witch because that's the one that I know the most about.
Okay, that sounds good. I appreciate that.
For me, I think Green Witch is a complicated term because there is actually a lineage. There's a tradition called Green Witch where it's a specific initiatory tradition. However, there are also lots of people who call themselves Green Witches, and they tend to be more nature-based, more elemental-based, not necessarily working with deity, but more working with the land and the elements and the spirits of the land. I don't think that's universal, that they're non-deists or whatever, but I think that's more likely than not that green witches tend to be more earth-based. I think that's where I would start with the conversation.
Okay. Well, I understand that, you know, it's interesting because, again, definitions and how it actually plays out in the real world is kind of sometimes a little fuzzy. And sometimes the aspects of each one of these three are, you know, they overlap. So we can't just say this is only it. But I know that, you know, the Green Witch is basically into, you know, and I say into gardening and herbalism and, you know, plants. And because of the green, it tends to obviously have a self-explanatory point of reference. But I believe that they also are mostly focused on that aspect. And, you know, they tend to be the rhythms of the earth are part of their life because of the way they deal with the plants and the earth and the element that way. So, you know, I feel that when we talk about it, I go, well, I'm not really a green witch. It's not that I'm not a green witch. I guess in a way it's because that isn't my primary focus. So it tends to be off on another, you know, basis. I mean, I like plants and I try to have a nice garden, but I'm not into, you know, excessive growing and things like that. And I would probably say that, you know, they're good with herbal remedies and, you know, the wild crafting. And I know that in my training, obviously, that was part of what I wound up, you know, we had part of what we were doing. So it kind of is an aspect that I never followed because I personally didn't feel the call. And yet my very dear friend, Alma, would be more of a green witch. She really loves to garden. She's, you know, planted things. She's done all these different, you know, remedies and potions and things. So I tend to feel that, you know, I look at that and I go, well, that's what I look at as more of a green witch. But, so, yeah, so, and let's see, is there anything we have magically excluded and not given time to?
Well,
do you have anything?
What I would add to that is there is, and I've probably talked about this book before because it is one of my favorite books, there is a book by Anne Moira called The Green Witchcraft or The Green Witch. Now that I've said it, I can't remember it. I'm trying to look on my bookshelf, but I can't see it from where I'm sitting. But I love this book. She is of the lineage of the green witchcraft tradition of the tradition of green witchcraft. So this is her lineage, right? The way she practices. But her book is great because it talks about how her tradition does things. And then the book is filled with correspondences. So that's why I usually recommend her book because it, if you're looking to do a spell or a ritual and you need some help with correspondences or some things that you can use or you need a basic ritual outline, her book is a great resource for that. And it gives you this interesting look. Oh, I know what it's called now. It just hit me. The Grimoire of the Green Witch. So part of the book is that this is also her personal book of shadows. It's her grimoire that she's sharing. And it gives you kind of a peek at how someone who calls themselves a green witch and who practices in a tradition called green witchcraft does things. So, you know, if you're a more of a nature-based type person and you're into the whole gardening thing and the rhythms of nature and more feeling called by that, this might be an interesting book to check out. If I'm not mistaken, though, she does also talk about deity and angels and you know, some of these other things that you might not necessarily think of as part of green witchcraft or, you know, earth witchcraft or whatever. She talks a lot about these other forces that can be incorporated into your work. But I love the book. I recommend it all the time because just the correspondences alone makes it worth it.
And, you know, a lot of times that's, I guess, when you look at certain things, because this may be a tradition. It may not be a tradition, but it may be the calling you have. But if you have something that you can utilize all of this, that's what the written word is probably the best known for, is to be able to put all these things in a way that people can go out and collectively find them, as opposed to your grimoire, which of course is, you know, if you're the only one in your family that did this, then you're not going to have a background, whereas somebody who has a more longer lineage of, you know, green witchery or any of the pagan and witchy things, you're basically going to have nothing. You know, you can draw on all that, but for many of the people, and because of the broken lineage that has happened because of, you know, different things that have taken place in our history, this is necessary. And if it's a good, it's good to have these kinds of things that you use and have in your, you know, library for that purpose. And
right.
It's in, yeah. And they do, there is a belief in deities, but it depends on the individual witch. And a lot of it is, and we were just talking in our last show about, you know, spirit of place and the fae, but usually the spirits of nature and, you know, the dead or the fae, you know, play a good part in the green witch tradition. So you were talking about deity. And,
right.
you know, you can utilize those same energies and beings when you're talking and working with the plants. I mean, just like the druids with the trees, you know, I mean, we've got that kind of energy pattern that works, that you can work with those spirits. And
yeah.
So I, you know, it's, and just as it says green, it's like dealing with more earth. So,
right.
And
yeah.
I think
I've actually noticed over the last few years there has been an interesting shift in the larger umbrella of paganism and witchcraft, of people who are into the eco-ness and the ecology and the land and being connected to the cycles of nature and the cycles of the land more than they're interested in connecting with gods, right? Because that does sometimes, the working with gods or being in devotion with deity can feel very power over, you know, we give the energy to a god. That's not how I work with deity, but I can see that it can emulate like the Christian system or the, you know, what our overculture might expect relationships between a god and a mortal to look like. And I think this is a new wave in paganism of people who aren't interested in that relationship. They don't see deity at all and are uninterested in exploring how that might show up in their lives. And so this is becoming more and more of a thing, and I really like it because I think that honoring my relationships with gods and having devotion to my gods is important, but I honestly think what's more important is honoring the land and the place where I live and taking care of it, because the planet sustains us, and if we don't take care of it, our gods aren't going to die. We are. Humanity
I think it's very
needs
practical.
To work with the planet. Yeah, it, absolutely. So I'm actually kind of excited to see that. I think it's good.
Yeah. And it you know, it's it draws a, and this draws on the folklore and the folk religion and the folk magic of our cultures that we are part of, whether it's, you know, here on North America or Eastern Europe, or Western Europe, or Central Europe, or Mediterranean, or Asian. You've got all these different areas, but they all are part, as you say, of the earth. But there's traditions and, you know, lore and magic that are part of it. And I feel that it's part of a web. And so in traditional aspects, I look at it as going, this is good, because we each have areas that we, I'll use the word, vibrate to. And if the green witch tradition or aspect of working with the spiritual and the energies are real to you and that works with you, then you're part of one part of the weaving, and then there are others that, you know, work more with, you know, the different deities and aspects. And yes, I think now the marriage of the two or the weaving of the two is coming together in a better tapestry. So, I've never, you know, the funny part is I use a lot of terminology about weaving, and the weirdest part is I did try doing weaving, and it never worked. I didn't get
hard.
The hang of it. It's hard, and I mean, I had somebody make a beautiful little loom, you know, and I didn't make it. It was just like, well, that was one experiment that definitely goes in the failed traditional aspect. You don't get to go there. So,
yeah.
But I see how that works, and energetically and sometimes even, you know, physically, I just can't, it's just not part of my world to actually happen. But you know, and it's funny, I never really thought about the terms green witch or head witch or kitchen witch. I knew they were used, okay, and I know we've sometimes I've even used them, but until I started really delving into the process, I never really got it. It was like they are separate, but they're collective. So I was really happy that we chose this particular subject to work on, because it gave me a better understanding. And as I have found with what we do with our show, is not only do we present things that we may have knowledge of or more of an expertise in, but it is a consistent learning of the more fine points of things without, you know, spending years within it. But it gives us, or gives me, a chance to look further into something that I would not necessarily probably take the time to do, because I'd be so busy doing something that, you know, I was so engrossed in and going off on a tangent, as my mom would say, going off to the other side. So I really appreciate getting these kinds of subjects and going for it, because it's as much a learning experience for me as it is anybody who's listening to us.
Right. Absolutely.
So,
I agree.
Okay. So, other than that, do we have anybody? I mean, I know that, you know, Anne Mora is a good source, and do we want to, you know, do we have any other things that we could share about the source information? I know that, as you say, that's a very good book, and it's a very, you know, good source. So, I mean, I know that obviously going on the internet is a big source for everybody.
Yeah.
So,
as far as my experience goes, that's the book that I know the best on that topic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I have. There was a book recently, and I haven't read it, and I honestly can't remember what it's called, but there's been a release recently, like Atheist Witchcraft or something like that, which explores more of these topics of working within a system of paganism and witchcraft without deity, and it tends to be much more green witchcraft based. So I would look, if this is striking your fancy, I would definitely look up resources that are connected to atheist witchcraft and paganism in ways that they're focused more on the land and less on deity. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, because I was trying to look through any of my things, and unfortunately, you know, there's a lot more, at least I found, there was a lot more on kitchen witches and hedge witches than it was on green witches, but that doesn't mean there aren't sources, just I couldn't find them. And, you know, there are places you don't have to be, in many ways, I think being, you don't have to have a garden, like an actual plot of land. I know that's always the best or that, but you can do it in, I know pots is another, you know, way to do it, or, you know, small gardens, small little things, because people, you know, and then we have hydroponics, which is indoor gardening, which is, you know, again, another version, a little distanced, because you're not really with the soil and the earth and that, but there are ways to, I think, maneuver around things that you might not be able to actually have your own land. Now, I know here in where I live, not only do we have little land around us, but they actually have a communal garden. So you can connect with spirit and the earth and the energies by something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Over and above, you know, that. So giving people options, I mean, to work in that. And of course, wildcrafting is very much a part of it. So doing that and going out and being aware of what's out in wooded areas or, you know, things of that nature. within context.
Yeah, I think wildcrafting is one of the things that sort of fits into all three of these titles. You know, I think that's what one of the big things that they all have in common is understanding plants and what's safe and how to safely wildcraft things, which is a show we could probably do a whole show on wildcrafting, but you know, to me anyway, that's one of the major things that these three streams of witchcraft have in common.
So, well, okay. So aspect number two, I'm going to leave hedge witch. I'm going to go with kitchen witch. Not because I'm a kitchen witch, but I mean, technically, I never inherited my mom's capacities to cook well. I cook okay, but, you know, cooking and working in the kitchen has never been where I excelled, which is why I married men who could, technically. But, you know, traditionally, I think a kitchen witch is also known as a cottage witch or a hearth witch. And the practical sides of the Wiccan pagan, you know, religions and magic, use of elements of the earth, stones, I think that is very much part of where that energy comes from. And, you know, I have to say sometimes when you read something about what they talk about and, you know, of course, cottage witch or Scandinavian witch, you know, they have certain things they focus on more than they do others. So, but go for a kitchen witch. I mean, I kind of dropped the basic and we'll see what else you have to offer and then I'll jump back in again, but go for it.
Yeah. So for me, I think the kitchen witch is the one that is the hardest to define, and not because it's not definable, but because I think a lot of people practice kitchen witchcraft and don't even know that they're doing it or don't consider it witchcraft at all.
Right.
You know, kitchen witches are the folks who understand how to cook love into dinner, and their food tastes amazing, not just because they're good cooks, but because they're adding a pinch of something else into it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I want to, you know, my husband is an excellent kitchen witch, and that's food magic is his one of his big shticks. But one of the things that I do just a little bit better than him, it, you know, like we will cook the same meal. For example, when the kids were younger, he would cook chicken and the kids wouldn't like it. And I would cook chicken and the kids would like it. And it wasn't a ton different in how we did it. I think I blame this on being a Taurus. This isn't something I intentionally do. It's just a gift I possess. The food that I cook always is tasty because I'm adding magic to it. And I'm not doing that intentionally, which is why I think that there's a lot of kitchen witches that don't recognize they're doing witchcraft. Some people are just gifted with adding something extra, and it's not the right spice. It's not the right vegetable. It's not the right temperature. It's something else that's undefinable. There's just a magic that they possess when they add a bit of this and a dash of that. And, you know, one of the things I love about witchcraft is getting my hands dirty. I like making potions. I like making herb mixtures. I make products for milk and honey. I make herb mixtures and baths and incense mixtures. I love all of that. And that is what cooking is. That's what creating tea, creating a meal, cooking something, baking is like the biggest way of doing kitchen witchcraft. All of that is, it's the same thing. Where you add a pinch of this and a dash of that, and you understand what the ingredients do. And that's, again, where this, like, wildcrafting and herbology and gardening, all of that comes in. When you work with a plant from seedling to fruit, you have an intimate relationship with that plant. It's magical. And then to turn it into food and eat that and share that with others, there's an inherent magic in that that goes beyond incantations or spells. This is, like, basic human to land to animal to plant relationship, and that's what makes things so tasty and delicious. But you can also cook all kinds of other things into food too. I don't mean to sound so like love and light and twee about it. You can also, you know, curse people with food or bless people with food or There's all kinds of spells and rituals for baking things into food, and whoever gets the token or charm or whatever gets the blessing, right? There's lots of ways to work it.
Right, right. And obviously, looking at the dynamics, it's about all of the different things and the way you do something and the thoughts and the feelings. And you're right. It's I was trying to think of some of the like Water for Chocolate. What was the other one? There was another one that was a cutesy one. I think it was called Irresistible. And then there was a third one. What was the one with Johnny Depp where the woman made chocolates and had a patisserie.
Chocolat.
See, those are all things that have brought to the fore, pluses and minuses, brought to the fore the same idea of this, of bringing that into the things that you cook and that you make, which is interesting because in some ways, and this is just a thought, I'm bringing this out as a topic for a mild discussion here. This is about kitchen. This is about the herbs and the earth and the plants and all the things that go into that. What would we call someone who is a seamstress or a tailor who does the same thing, but with the fabric and the items? I mean, obviously, we immediately, and it's funny only because there's been a lot of posting on one of my Facebook pages of Christian Dior, beautiful gowns that are made, et cetera. But it's magical. It's magical.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's, we talk about the magic garments that are in folk tales and fairy tales, the fairy godmother that decks out, Cinderella, and it's a beautiful gown. It isn't just beautiful, it's magical. So I'm kind of curious, it's slightly off of Kitchen Witch, but it has the same concept of weaving or moving or putting the elements into something. And of course, fabric and stones and beads are all part of earth as well, but not as, simplistically. I mean, you take a plant and you, as you say, you have a relationship with it, and then you cook it, and then you ingest it, so it goes inside of you cellularly versus something you put on. But what are your thoughts on that?
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think, I think it's a different form of magic. However, imbuing a piece of fabric as you sew it is also very powerful. But you're going to put that on. So it's like a glamour, right? You imbue a piece of fabric, or you embroider a magical sigil into something and you put that on, you're putting on the glamour of it. And then when you're done with that piece of magic, you take it off and you save it for the next time or whatever, you know what I mean? With cooking or the more kitchen focused arts of, baking and whatnot, you're preparing something that you're going to ingest. And if you do this regularly, if you're always cooking love into your food or abundance into your food or whatever, then you're creating spell work that's ongoing. So it's like the same concept of having a mojo bag that you wear every day, right? Or a charm or whatever that you're wearing every day, except instead of putting it on like a glamour and taking it off, you're internalizing it, you're adding it into the chemistry of your body.
Okay. See, and again, it's just another version, but it was funny because we were reading this, and see, my mother comes from a more, she passed away, but my mother did come from a more country folk, and out in the country and grew up in a time where, you did kill your own chickens and pluck them and do all that and, do the things that you needed to do with the land. My father's side of the family, though they came from Sicily and were obviously of the land type thing, they were tailors and seamstresses. And
right.
that line came in from, you know, over there. And it's funny because both of those lines create, but you're right, one of them is you make it cellular. And I know that in a lot of traditions, you know, you have the light and you have the dark. And so when you do want to create, you know, something that could cause harm or that you are going at, you know, there's a lot of that. And I know in the Hoodoo tradition, it is a very prominent, and I, you know, there are other traditions that also use it. It just happens that, you know, with the fact that you and I both have taken, you know, Hoodoo training, et cetera, in terms of that, it's something that's very much a part of it, and books have been specifically written on things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I just look at, it is more personal because it goes
yeah.
into your body, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, absolutely.
You know,
and
that,
food does impact our bodies. It, you know, so to get super personal, this might be TMI, sorry. Not really, but, you know, I've been having some pretty serious issues with my digestion, and I finally reached a point where I've gone to talk to my doctor about it, and when she started asking me questions, I had to really look back and realize that I've been dealing with these problems for probably over 5 years, and I've just been muddling through. And my diet has never been perfect. I like junk food. I like fast food. I like sugar. I like all of the things that are bad for you. I like processed foods, and I eat them. I eat them all.
Right, right.
and as a way of dealing with that, I keep saying I've been put on a diet, but that's not what's happening. I'm choosing
right.
to be on this IBS diet program to figure out what foods are making me feel sick. And it's really
right.
hard and restrictive, but you know what? I've only been doing it, today's the 16th, I've been doing it for 16 days, and I am feeling better because I am taking
mm-hmm.
time with the food that goes into my body. I'm being very cautious about what goes into my body, and it is changing my body literally on a basic biological level. It's changing the bacteria that live in my gut and the parasites that live in my body. All of those levels
mm-hmm.
are changing, hopefully to bring me back into a healthier balance, right? So
right.
that's true of all of us. What we eat in our bodies are like our a universe. What's happening
right.
inside of our organs and our stomachs and our colons and our intestines, they're filled with millions of bacteria and parasites and creatures that are minuscule and impact how we feel every damn day.
Mm-hmm.
And if we try to
mm-hmm.
work with and be in harmony with those systems, we should feel better. And I know that's
right.
very simplistic. That's not always the case. Some people are very ill. I get it. But generally speaking, the majority of people can bring their bodies into a better relationship by what they put into their bodies. And that's part of what kitchen witchcraft is for me, is being
mm-hmm.
aware of what goes into our food and therefore into our bodies. And making some
right.
really conscious decisions instead of just shoveling a bean burrito from Taco Bell in my mouth, I'm having to look at the repercussions of what some of those foods will do to me, you know?
Exactly.
And when I was 20, the repercussions were nothing because my body didn't care. I could eat a bomb and my stomach would be like, great, what's next? But my body at 41, my body doesn't do that anymore.
Happens. Well, you know, think of it this way. It's not even when we look at things and we say they age, and so obviously our car ages and we need to be more careful about, you know, we don't abuse it, our body, the same thing. But I think in a way it's also that, without going into the massive amounts that we may have super abused our bodies, it just is a refinement. You know, I was actually talking to somebody more recently. I don't drink. I don't drink wine. I don't drink alcohol really of any kind, not because I'm a teetotaler, but because my body has not liked that particular ingestment at all. I mean, it's just that simple. But I did find that There's only a one particular brand that I will use that I have used a small amount of for a long, long, long time of alcohol. That being said, the other day I went out with a friend and we wound up, I had, you know, Bailey's and cream and coffee. And my body was fine with it. And I was like, okay, mm-hmm. not that I'm going to spend my time going out and, you know, enhancing the ingestment of that in my life. It's just, it obviously, whatever the circumstances were and everything, but I am very careful now about the concept of what I put in, not necessarily every little bite because of particular things, but just that my body doesn't like it. And I've tried it and it keeps mm-hmm. giving me the same, you know, kickback. And I'm like, okay, guess that's not part of my world anymore. But I think it's just right. our body gets refined and our energies get refined and our state of life changes and we don't have the same, we keep wanting to use the words resilience, which of course all keeps talking about aging as if it were, you know, I mean, it is a deterioration guaranteed because that's what happens when age happens with anything. But I think it's redefining what your body can best handle and why, not just that it can't handle milk or whatever. It's, there is more to it than that. And I think that for you, it sounds like you're doing a redefinition of you, not just your diet.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
You know, yeah. So, but so, do we want to take a break?
Oh yeah. I haven't even been tracking that. We should probably take a break.
Yes. Well, we'll take a break now and come back shortly. Okay.
We'll be back.
Yes.
Magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, Blue Flag Root Radio with Lady Muse, Fridays 4 to 5, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7. All times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
Ah, and that was quick
there
and easy, and there we are. All right. So our last one, do we have anything more we want to go with Kitchen Witch?
Nah, let's keep going.
All right, let's go. Well, Hedge Witch, which? yes, okay. The Hedge Witch is a lot more, there's a different feel to the Hedge Witch. I mean, obviously, the hedge in ancient times was becoming, you know, like a border between, you know, neighboring villages or anything. So my feeling with the way when somebody talks about Hedge Witch, I feel it's between the physical and non-physical realm. It's working with, you know, what I guess some people call the other world. But it's that mm-hmm. process. And I tend to... Personally, I tend to feel more comfortable in that category, if you're going to put a category down. So, but, you know, there's a lot of different things that are based upon it. So, again, still working with the earth and the nature and things like that, but I think also working with the, if we were going to use the deities or the otherworldly energy patterns. So, thoughts on that one? Go for it.
Yeah. What I find interesting about hedge witchery, which is the one I'm, of all these three titles, I'm the least experienced with and have the least relationship to. One year mm-hmm. at PanthiaCon, Devin Hunter did a workshop on riding the hedge.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry,
mm-hmm.
I'm. Pardon me for 1 second while I take a sip of my water. Thank you. And he talked about hedge writing as what I might even consider like trance work or astral projection, and sort of going to these different parts of reality to do magical work or serve community or whatever. And I hadn't really ever thought of that term being used for, but basically the way he described things, I was like, oh yeah, well that's what I do. I've just never called it hedge riding or hag riding or hedge jumping or whatever. And this term is sort of more Celtic old world term, and to be like hedge can sometimes translate as hag depending on the language. So this was another way of saying, oh, watch out for Mary. She's a hedge rider, you know, to insinuate someone with a witch.
Right.
So I find it really interesting, you know, and there's a relationship between wart cunning and herbology and working with the land, and also traveling into the other realms while in relationship with the land. It's quite fascinating.
Right, right. It's interesting because you did call it hedge witchery and hedge ride. There is a book by Eric DeVries called Hedge Rider. So, you know, that is something that has been, explored and brought in. And that really, it's about the crossing that hedge, the other world. It's like working on the other planes with ancestors and deities and yet still working. And you're right. It maybe one that we don't necessarily I heard it a long time ago when I first got into exploring witches and witchery and Wicca and everything, and I related more to it, not because it says hedge and thus it's a plant and thus it goes to that. It's just the energy of it. So I think it's like midwives and healers. A lot of healers are part of it. So yes, and I guess if I were to consider taking PC, shamanism would be considered, hedge witch would be considered a part, you know, that energy pattern of shamanism, working with, you know, between the worlds and working along in that pattern. So, definitely.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
So, I know the word shaman is tricky because technically a shaman comes from a very specific region of Siberia and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I get it. But it's become a word that people understand, especially people outside of witchcraft and paganism. If you say, oh, I'm like a shaman, people get what you're trying to say. Although none of us can be shamans, really, unless we are indoctrinated into this one tribe, which is unlikely, blah, blah, blah. But it is a word that we get. And what I find interesting is how many similarities between shamanic practices and hedge witch practices there are. And maybe that's something we can start encouraging. Instead of saying, oh, I'm a shaman or I practice shamanism, maybe we can start referring to that as being a hedge witch or practicing hedge witchery. Because at least to me, without having any personal experience from anyone, any of my teachers have not referred to themselves as hedge witches, so I have not been trained in that title. But from just the outside, it looks like the same thing.
Hello?
Can you not hear me? Elvira.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hello? My head piece. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. My headpiece decided to just decide not to go anywhere. I agree with you on that. Yeah, I know. And the problem is I don't know how to disconnect the headpiece. Well, maybe I'll try this and see if I can do that. I can go to speaker. Can you hear me?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, good. All right. I'm not disconnecting us. I'm putting this on speaker. That way it doesn't have to work. I think my headpiece is starting to die.
Oh, no.
I know. It was like, oh, my, not just die. I mean, like, permanently, like it's not functioning well, it's not charged, like things. But interesting enough is, I agree with you, and it's, in terms of what it is, it's funny because I was just reading, and of course when all this sort of went sidewards and we lost verbal communication here for a minute, it actually talks about shamans are often regarded as a type of hedge witch, ability to communicate with spirits that most of us can't see. So if we as witches can start using that as a term that then puts us in touch with the the same kind of work, but from a different culture, and thus we're not appropriating anything. I think that would be a good thing to actually start as a movement, or if it is already started, to enhance it.
I think also, at least again, from what I've been reading, a lot of it is also working with herbs and having a real clear understanding of herbs that are hallucinatory or poisonous. You know, all plants are poisonous, period. You can eat peppermint all day long, and all of a sudden it gives you a stomach ache, right? Because it's not good for you in excess. So this is true of all plants on the planet. But there are some plants where you can only have a much smaller dose than others. If you look at like belladonna, like back in the day, people were putting drops of belladonna tincture to make their pupils dilate because it was considered to be more attractive, right? And now belladonna, people are like, oh, don't touch belladonna, it'll kill you. But I think a hedge witch has a more clear understanding of those herbs, of the poison herbs, of the more dangerous herbs, and knows how to work in relationship with those herbs for healing and journeying and riding the hedge, air quotes here. I think that seems like a big part of it.
Right. And interesting is that one of the things I would, you know, hedge witches, I would think have like a chance to work with like the owl or something. But one of the places here talks about most commonly associated are the raven and the goose. So figure that one. Yeah, I know.
So
I'm
interesting.
Like, that answers that particular question of what animal or fowl or creature we have is, you know, I'm not saying geese aren't great or a raven isn't. It's just I would have thought with this it would have been like the owl because of all of the night stuff and the vision and all. But, you know, maybe that's just one source that decided to use that. But anyway. So, but yeah, we're looking at, and I guess in a way, it's also considered a hereditary. I mean, not or a lineage that is handed down. And I don't think at this point I can justify saying that it is only that anymore, because again, going back to what we've experienced is the disruption of lineages and things that have shifted and changed. So for me, looking at this, I would say that it may not be directly in my ancestral line that this is the case that I can point to, that I am this and it has come down to me. But what I look at is how do we morph? How do we change? What does it mean? You know, my family, obviously, there's certain things from Sicily and some Scotland and all, but nobody's going to say anything, and it certainly wasn't, quote, out in any kind of way that someone could understand it, because the times changed where, you know, things happened, people ended their experiences with this for one reason or another, but energetically it comes down. So for the things that I have, I think that I am more energetically in tune with this in a lineage way, but not necessarily a direct line going down.
I'm curious about it, and you know, I know, to go back to Devin Hunter for a minute, I know that he has 3 books out, I think, through the Llewellyn Publishing Company, The Witch's Book of Power, The Witch's Book of Spirits, and The Witch's Book of Something Else. And I know he writes about hedge writing in some of these books. So it is something I'm interested in exploring more. I am curious about it. You know, the sort of darker, mysterious stuff really appeals to me. But, you know, in my spare time, I'll add that to my list of things to study.
No kidding. I mean, all of us have so much, you know, going on. And And I was actually just talking this morning to my roommate about, you know, we were talking, you know, sometimes it's a very short conversation because we're both off to our works, but about the idea of what's going on and how we are changing our, you know, what we're doing and where, how much time we have and, you know, things are going to happen and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking I have to stay positive for one reason. The more I stay there, the better I'm centered to be able to help in keeping the chaos from overtaking the environment of where I'm at. And that's clients and that's friends and that's, you know, situations and jobs and all of that. So, of course, studying hedge witchery and anything else that I can throw in on those times when I have nothing else that I'm doing, like you, what the hell? We'll try for it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I know that, you know, there's all different things about how to go about getting in touch with, you know, people who teach this and communities, be that, you know, I don't know. It's kind of funny. It's like, who's more of a recluse, the green witch, the kitchen witch, or the hedge witch? And I think at this point, that delineation is not necessary. I mean, for a lot of reasons. We all are involved in groups or singularly have people we connect with. And if you find someone who, whether they say they're not, they are this particular type, mm-hmm. you want to, you know, get to know them or study with them if they're up for studying, you know, teaching, then I think that's viable. In terms of credentials, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yep.
But I like it because for me, I can see, I guess it's funny because sometimes it's like, what do hedge witches do? We stick around and look at things. I don't know. but I think a lot of it is observation. I think that one of the things that we have as witches in general is the ability to observe and to see patterns. It's how we interpret those patterns in the context to what we have as our tradition or our what we follow, where we are. So, you know, I would say looking at hedge witches, it would be probably the patterns of not just the earth and the elements, but of the animals and people and that are on the planet as well. So I think it's a broader base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, we probably should start wrapping up.
Looking at our time going, oh my God, we are actually at that point where it's time.
Yeah. And I have no idea what our next show is about because I don't have my calendar in front of me and I don't know what day it is. So
okay,
we will have another show.
Yes. And technically, as far as the future that this is going to go in, no, I don't. I have no idea, just like you. It's going to be a question.
It'll
stay
be a surprise.
Tuned. Yes, a definite surprise. So for all those out there, please tune in for our next show after this one. It'll be a surprise for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for listening.
Thank you very much. Have a good week.
Yes. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Today, customer service teams have to do more with less. More work, less team. More expectation, less budget. But AI is changing everything. Intercom's new AI-first platform upgrades support for everyone. Customers get more answers, less waiting. Agents get more interesting work, less busy work. And managers get more efficient teams on less additional headcount. So if you want less of this, it's time to get more out of your support platform. Intercom, AI first customer service.